Welcome, everybody, to the Disney Film Project podcast. This is the podcast where we discuss the films of the Walt Disney Pictures Department of the Walt Disney Company, Esquire, or something like that. We discuss the Disney films, we talk about them, we blog about them, we live our lives by them, and we come here on this podcast to discuss them. So, with me, Ryan Kilpatrick, the host of the program, owner of DisneyFilmProject.com, is our two fine, fabulous film buffs who you have come to know, love, and cherish. First of all, we have Mr. Todd Perlmutter, Chief Technical Officer at DisneyDrivenLife.com and blogger at TouringPlans.com. Mr. Todd Perlmutter, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. What are we going to do tonight, Ryan?
We're going to do a movie.
A movie?
Yes.
Sorry, you missed your opening. Never mind. We'll talk about it later. Yes.
Gonna try and take over the world.
Oh, you were trying to hit me with a Pinky in the Brain reference?
Yes.
Okay, that hit me in the left field. All right.
But it's okay.
I would have been there with you.
There's a reason for it, but we'll talk about it later.
Okay, I just needed a little prep work. That's all right. The second film lover that we have on this fine program, who is not going to try and trip me up with erstwhile Spielberg animated references, is Miss Brianna Alessio, blogger at The Adventures of Bree at adventuresofbree.blogspot.com. Hello, Bree.
Greetings, Sir Kilpatrick. How are you this evening?
Hot. The air conditioning has been out for 3 days.
That is not good.
No, it's 90 degrees in my house, and I'm not making that up.
Oh, no. Is the repairman heading over soon, or...?
The repairman is recording a podcast at the moment, so he'll be heading over once we get done.
Okay, gotcha.
Awesome. Yeah.
I had it fixed. It was running for about 10 minutes, and then it stopped.
Okay.
So that wasn't good. No. Somebody who would have it fixed for longer than 10 minutes is our producer, Miss Cheryl Perlmutter, who I'm sure if she were here would have it running and up and ready in like the next 15 minutes, and we would all be cool and sipping martinis on the back porch. Hello, Cheryl.
I would just call a repairman. Sorry.
Well, it's my choices are call a repairman and skip a Disney trip, or do it myself and take the Disney trip. I think all of our audience is with me on the do-it-yourself craze.
I think Cheryl would just stare it down and it would start again.
I would do that, too. That as well. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to discuss a piece of cinematic history. A film that lives on in legend. A film that is known around the world for its countryness and its berryness.
All right, excuse me, I need a bucket.
Yes! It's the Country Bears, ladies and gentlemen. The Country Bears. July of 2002. We all remember it fondly. The millions upon millions of us that went to the theater to see the Country Bears live and in person on their great reunion film, the fabulous movie that was released by Walt Disney Pictures. But we're digressing from the greatness that is the Country Bears. So,
yeah.
No?
Yeah, no.
But it was such a huge hit. Among the world at large.
Hit might be a word I'd use, but I think more reactively than proactively. I'm just
saying. What Todd said, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it made so much money.
No.
But the thing is, so what you're saying is it's one of those films that people really liked. It just a lot of people didn't see it, so the critics liked it, right?
Even that, no.
No, not really.
I'm grasping at straws here. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Country Bears. It is probably one of the biggest flops in recent Disney memory. Would that be fair to say?
That would be fair to say.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. $35 million budget. Again, not that huge for a film. It didn't make its money back. So
not even close.
No.
and that's all time, folks. Like in all the years since, hasn't made its money back.
Now, Ryan, this is or is not your favorite movie?
It is not my favorite movie. My favorite movie, as revealed earlier in the Pirates show, is Pirates of the Caribbean: Curse of the Black Pearl. However, I do really like this movie. I will put that up front, because as you may be able to tell, my fellow hosts on this program are not fans.
Wait, I like this movie. I did. I think it was missing parts. I think it was, those parts were missing for a reason. We'll go into that when we go later into the podcast. But I really think it had some. I think it really had some great plot lines. Get great items in there that they used for story mechanisms.
Todd and Bree are about to shoot themselves right now. I'm just going to be honest, folks. We do this show, and we have video, and the two of them are looking at Cheryl and I like we've lost our minds.
I'm just trying to figure out the appeal of this movie.
Yeah.
And see, I don't understand why people don't like it.
I do have something to say now.
Okay.
I was talking with Amy Beth Combs, a couple days ago, and we were talking about the Country Bears. And she used to work at her local Disney store. And she said, you know, the movie was horrible. She started out by saying that. And the second thing she said was, when all the bears came out, all the plush stuffed animals, none of them sold. They ended up giving them all to charity.
Because they were freakish.
That too. But in addition to the fact that the movie was not the best quality.
Okay, let's back up, right?
Wait a minute. These guys go. I'm putting my defense cap on here.
All
right.
These
guys go in for meats in Magic Kingdom and get lines, folks.
But those characters look way better and cooler than the characters that actually are in the movie.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I mean,
No. These characters in the movie, they're like, I know this was a G-rated movie, but I'm thinking like kids might have been scared by these things. They bare teeth. They have like, you know, bleeding gums. It's really kind of scary.
Their eyes too. They're freakishly huge.
I'm not getting this, guys. not getting that. What else you got?
No.
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no.
So, wait a minute. So, you're telling me that the movie is bad because you don't like the way the bears look?
No. Reasons.
That's one of the reasons, yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was going to say, because if that's all you got.
No, we will get there.
Okay. All right. No, I mean, so here's my thing, right? My biggest thing. First of all, don't get me wrong, because first of all, this movie has a really good soundtrack, okay? I really like the soundtrack a lot, okay? But here's the thing. If you're going to make a movie that's a musical, you actually should have a plot in it that isn't 100% contrived and with terrible jokes throughout.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't agree that it's 100% contrived and with terrible jokes throughout. So, here's my crucial question.
Okay.
All right. Have you seen The Blues Brothers?
Yes. So, okay, you want to go there? Because I actually wrote down three movies.
Yeah. So, well, let's start with that. Bree, have you seen The Blues Brothers?
I have.
Okay.
I don't think I have.
Okay, so that's interesting. My theory before starting was that people who if you've seen that movie, The Country Bears is that movie, basically.
Oh, yeah, it's also
so plot from the plot structure.
Somewhat. Yeah, but Blues Brothers isn't the only getting the band back together movie. I mean, it's like that's like a contrived thing. I mean, okay, let's really look at it. That's like the Seven Samurai and getting the samurai back together.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not. It's the same thing. It's an old, you know, movie thing. It goes way back. You know, my problem is, I also wrote down two other movies that it reminded me of.
I'm sorry. I just want to say that also the Blues Brothers don't have freakishly huge eyes and are covered with fur. I just want to mention that as well. So.
But they wear sunglasses just like Ted Betterhead does in this movie.
But Ryan, Ted's sunglasses were purple.
Yes, they were purple. I will grant you that. But he was wearing sunglasses, just like Jake and Elwood.
And a lounge singer's outfit.
You say that like it should mean it disqualifies the movie.
No, I just, you know, it was it, one like, of those things.
If you could pull off a lounge singer's outfit, you would. I'm just saying.
No.
Okay.
You, yes, you, I believe, would. Yes, and I would. All right, so the other two movies I wrote down, right, that I thought that this was kind of a combination. This really wasn't entirely Blues Brothers, okay? Because, one, Blues Brothers has way more plot in this movie does, which is scary because, again, it's Blues Brothers, and I know that's a strange statement.
Okay. I don't know if I'm buying it, but okay.
The other two movies I wrote down were True Romance and Almost Famous. If you take out the R-rated stuff... It's really like a combination of all three of those.
Okay, I see the nostalgia piece of Almost Famous. I get that part of it. And the kid with the band, okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I see that. But that's not a getting the band together movie. In that movie, the band's already together.
That's right. I understand that. But it has that... You know, I see elements of all three movies in this movie. But unfortunately, I don't see the best elements of all three movies in this
movie. What was the middle one you said?
I said True Romance.
True Romance?
Which I know involves guns and killing people, but that's
I was going to say, you're going to have to give me that one because I'm not seeing it.
No, I just some of the moments in the movie with the chases and stuff like that, that's what it reminded me of.
You know what? When I think of the Country Bears, I do have to think of guns, so.
Yeah. She went there. I didn't go there.
I think if this movie had been directed by Tarantino, it would have been good. Just saying.
Wait, did you just say imply the movie was bad then?
No.
No?
Just saying, I would love to see a Tarantino-directed sequel to The Country Bears. I think that would rock.
Wow.
It would probably involve shotguns too, yes.
Hey, I'm just saying, listen to the songs in the attraction. You know, Mama Don't Whoop Little Buford. I think you should shoot him instead.
Yes.
It's custom made. Blood on the saddle. It's all right there. You just have to read the context. That's what I'm saying.
I was actually kind of disappointed that none of these songs from the attraction are actually in the movie.
Me too.
You're also very disappointed neither the moose or the other guy was in the movie either.
That's right.
Where's
Max, Melvin, and Buff?
Exactly. They should have been at Country Bear Hall.
Well, you know, they keep being Country Bear Hall.
I think they didn't do that for animal reasons, I'm guessing.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, I'm just saying Tarantino produced Country Bears. Think about it, Disney. But you guys are disappointed that they didn't have references to the other people in the ride in the movie?
Oh, well,
that didn't bother me.
It did bother you or didn't bother you?
It did not bother me, no.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I realize that it's, what is it, the five bear rugs is basically where most of the characters come from, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, my thing was is that it's interesting, and I got where they were going with it, but unfortunately I saw it way before it happened, which kind of sort of, I mean, this movie was not like...
Well, you were wrong, though. Wait. Let's point out to everybody in the listening audience and Brian and Brianna that you were wrong in the way they were going to use the mechanism that you saw.
So I pointed out very early on when Barry was packing to go and he takes his bear collar. I said, well, okay, this is the loaded gun, right? Because he throws it in his bag. We know it's going to be used somehow. I figured that they were going to, the Rangers were going to come track him down. And then, of course, once I realized what was going on and the bus gets stolen, they get kidnapped, I said, oh, he's going to track them with that. And then they run back to the room and track him. Now, I know I've jumped completely to the other end of the movie. We haven't even actually started talking about the actual movie yet.
I don't think it matters.
No.
I really don't. No.
No. But. It's very transparent and very telegraphed throughout, right?
But I don't feel like that's a bad thing. But I don't think the suspense of the movie or the reason why you're watching is to see whether or not the band gets back together and performs the concert and saves Country Bear Hall. Like if you see the setup in the first 10-15 minutes, you know that's what's gonna happen. It's not about that. It's about the journey, not the destination, right? It's about the characters and what they're doing and, you know, the fun that you have along the way.
I guess, but, I mean, it's not like I didn't see all that coming, too. I mean, it's, again, because you know that they're going to get back together and you know where it's all leading to, I didn't find myself getting attached in the way I think that the writer was trying to get people to become attached to the characters.
Exactly.
Okay, I can see that. That's fair. But I think, so it's worthwhile, speaking of the writer, to talk about how this movie kind of came to be. Because Disney started this writing program, and I may be getting a lot of this wrong, but I think I have the basic gist of it. But they started this writing program in order to start, you know, developing writers in-house, basically. And it's still going on today. You know, because some of the people who have written some of their more recent films are people from the writing program.
Prom! This, prom!
Okay. Fair point. But the person who wrote this, Mark Perez, there was also, at the same time that this writing, I mean, you could call it like a farm development sort of thing, this program was going on. There was also this initiative from Eisner and the top to say, well, we have taken our films and turned them into theme park attractions. Let's take the theme park attractions and turn them into films.
Yes.
You can debate very easily whether or not that was a good idea. However, I will point you to the fact that since they made that decision on the theme park movies, the company has made billions of dollars based off those theme park movies. Granted, it's mostly only the pirate movies.
Yeah.
But
here was an interesting thing. So I looked at this too, and I looked at the list, and you know, I don't remember the Tower of Terror movie at all.
I do.
They show it in, don't they show that part of the movie in the attraction? Isn't that the part they show?
No.
Okay.
Right. But they do sell it in the gift shop.
They do? Okay.
I remember on Disney Channel.
Can I ask just one question without looking? Did it star Steve Guttenberg?
Yes, it did.
Oh, then maybe I do remember. Okay, maybe it's
and Kirsten
like,
Dunst.
Maybe I just tried to scoop
lock
that
it from your memory.
Oh, I loved it. It was so good. Anyway.
But here's, I had no clue until I read the list that the Mission to Mars movie was one of these movies. No idea.
But see, I think, and so this is irrelevant to Country Bears. I think that was the point of this program, because you can see it in Pirates, right? The idea was take the name and the concept of the attraction and create a film, not a film that follows the storyline of the attraction. The one that does that the most is Haunted Mansion, right? It's a tour of the mansion trying to figure out, you know, they do put some stakes into it, and we can talk about that film at another time. But other than that, every other movie, for the most part, is here's the title of the attraction, here's the basic theme, and, you know, some of the character ideas, and go. Right, but they're in Pirates. There's no characters in the movie that are in the ride,
right?
You know, except for, you know, homages and things like that. And I think that's what they were going for here with Country Bears. They took the idea of, like you said, the five bear rugs. They said, "Here's a band," and they created a very elaborate backstory for them.
Yes,
which I thought that part was actually really well done and quite amusing.
Yeah, the backstory was very good. Here's the thing, right, is I didn't dislike the concept of the movie, okay, and what they probably set out to do with the movie. I just didn't like what it became.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, it's a cute idea, okay? The bears still kind of find them a little scary, but that's probably just, you know, that's the way Henson is. I mean, okay, so they're done by Jim Henson Studios, right? They were actually outfits, was my understanding, that people are wearing with some amount of animatronics on them.
They're puppeteers, basically.
They're scary to me like Skeksis are scary.
From the Dark Crystal?
Yes.
What? What is the Dark Crystal?
Oh,
it's a
no.
Muppet movie.
It's a Jim Henson movie.
Oh.
It's on Netflix streaming, Brie.
Yes.
Oh, I will do that. Okay.
Yes, you should.
Yes. Although I tried to watch it with my children over the weekend. Doesn't hold up as well as you might think.
There's too much drawn out stuff in Dark Crystal. That's its fundamental flaw. Probably needs about 20 minutes cut out of it and it would be a better movie. But that's a different story. But
there's actually a little too much plot in that movie.
It's just as a side thing, everybody, it's Dark Crystal is worth seeing because it was a very good attempt at something new at the time, and that's the whole reason to watch it. Okay, now back to Country Bears. Da-da-da!
The Country Bears are better than the Skeksis, I'm just saying.
But just as scary.
No.
Let's talk about the cast of the Country Bears. Because I wanted to start talking about the cast. Let's just moving off this plot.
Because I'd like to do it.
Yes.
So Haley Joel Osment, the main character in the movie, Barry Barrington, who is the guy who gets the ball rolling, right? He's the one who decides that... So in case you couldn't tell already, the plot of the movie is the Country Bears broke up a long time ago. They were basically a big old rock and roll slash country band, kind of like the Eagles, basically. And they need to get the band back together to save Country Bear Hall.
At the end where they go, they were fat before it was spelt with a PH.
Yeah, they were. That's right.
I mean, the jokes were funny.
You're laughing at the movie. I'm telling you, you were entertained and you don't even realize it.
Yeah, but few and far between.
You're a bad person.
Mostly, right. I think the movie would have been better had they left the cops out, but that's a different story.
Oh, I love those guys.
Ugh.
Really?
Yeah. No. Really, they were like the worst part of the movie.
Exactly. Okay. Oh, the whole car wash scene? Oh. I wanted to be over.
I thought that was funny. But Barry, played by Haley Joel Osment, is the one who tries to get these guys back together. That is the point we were trying to say. Haley Joel Osment doesn't actually puppeteer the bear. He is just the voice of the bear. So really, it's just
he's only the speaking voice. So we need to clarify that. Speaking
correct.
Voice only.
I'm disappointed he wasn't actually in the bear costume. That would have been epic.
Yes. except that if you watch anything about the movie, like to this day, Disney, except for the fact that at the very end it says Jim Henson's Creature Shop, they have not yet admitted that these were not actual bears.
Oh, I like that.
I didn't catch the end, but does it say no animals were harmed in the making of the film? Oh, wait, it has to, because the chicken was on the movie. Darn.
Yeah, once there's a live animal, they have to say that. Yeah.
Well, in the credits they say, you know, bears by Jim Henson, Creature Shop and everything. But I'm talking about, like, in any of Disney's marketing materials, in any of their behind-the-scenes featurettes, anything, they have not yet admitted that these were not real bears. And that this was not a real band. I have to give them credit for sticking to it.
Well, when they make a story, they stick with it. I mean, that's the way they operate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you would think. But anyway. What did we think of Haley Joel Osment's characterization there of old Barry?
Pretty good. You know, fair.
It was okay. All right, we were talking for a second there about things that I actually thought were funny in the movie.
Yeah.
One of the things that I actually enjoyed in the movie, how everybody except for his older brother missed the fact that he was a bear.
That's the key to the movie, in my opinion.
Really?
Yes, because the whole device of the movie is to basically make you accept this idea that there are these walking, talking bears along with the humans in the real world, right? Whether you accept it or not, it's up to you. But that's the plot device, right? And if you watch the movie, like everywhere they go, there's a walking, talking bear.
Yes.
The bear may not say anything. It may just be in the background of the shot. It may just be whatever.
Right.
But you got to give them credit. They stick to that throughout the movie.
It is. It's everywhere they go, because it's most noticeable at the car washes. There's actually a bear drying one of the cars or something like that.
Yeah. But even at the beginning, like when they go to Country Bear Hall, there's a bear driving a tractor, which I thought was awesome. You know, there's bears everywhere. And that they set that up right at the very beginning, that nobody thinks twice about this.
Yeah.
His brother, who is there to represent the audience's point of view, because we're all going, what in the blue blazes is going on here?
Yeah, so here's the funny thing is, the only place that bears are strangely absent is the audiences within the movie.
Yes. Very true.
Not one audience that watches them sing, whether it's in a prior reel or in Cha-Cha's Bar or at the end, there's no bears in any of those audiences.
But what I'm guessing is that the bears that we saw on the side of the road or whatever were the same bear costumes, just reused.
That may be.
That would be my guess. And that's why it would be that way.
I just think bears don't like country music.
I think it's entirely possible. I think that's entirely possible. But you see what I'm saying? Like, the brother is supposed to be our point of view. When we watch the movie, we're going, why does no one understand that this is a bear? And so he gives voice to that, and by giving voice to that, you can let it go. Now, whether you choose to let it go or not is your thing. But
So I think the point to let it go is when you decide to purchase a movie ticket or rent this movie, and it's got bears, and it's called The Country Bears, and you understand that it's about talking bears. That's about the point that you have to let it go.
Right, but I mean, it could have been all about the bears and not about the people. You know what I'm saying? Like, they set up the conceit right there at the beginning that it's a mixture of the two, and the fact that nobody blinks at these bears walking around. That's what I mean. Like, the brother is supposed to say, "Hey, this is crazy," and nobody else thinks it is, so we should just go on that way.
That was it, like right from the beginning, you know, Barry sitting at the table and they show his parents. That's when you start thinking, oh, it's that kind of movie.
Right.
So you're wondering where it's going to go from there. You know?
Yeah, I don't think you really needed the brother to be saying it. I think if you're not getting it, you probably didn't pay the $7 at the time that this movie came out to go see the movie. That's what I'm thinking. Which is fairly evident.
I think it was a good piece of writing, because the whole movie, right, is a wink and a nod movie, right? I mean, am I correct about this? I mean, the idea is they're sort of playing to the fact that this everything in this movie is a joke. It's basically a farce. It's like a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah. Can I ask you a really weird question since we're talking about things? Because there was one thing in this movie that I just didn't get. And they dwelled on it just a little too long, so it bothered me. Cheats and Ham. I don't get it. What was the point of that? Is there actually like a real joke reference there that I'm missing?
It's actually Ham and Cheats.
Oh, like and Ham and Cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, no. See, I didn't get it.
Okay, moving along.
All right, then. Okay.
Let's move along.
So speaking of Ham and Cheats, we talked about the Daryl Mitchell, or Daryl Chill Mitchell, as he's referenced in the credits, and Diedrich Bader, who plays the two cops. So Barry runs away after his brother is so mean to him in the beginning of the movie, and you know, like, hey, you're a bear, even though Barry doesn't get it. And the cops show up because they think that, you know, Barry has gone missing. And so the cops are played by Daryl Mitchell and Diedrich Bader. So what did we think of them in this movie? I hear bad things so far.
Like I said earlier, I just felt they were literally... I just didn't understand why they were in this movie at all.
I was weirded out by the fact that Daryl Chill Mitchell was again, walking. Because I didn't understand at that point that he had been that the movie was done before he was paralyzed. I had looked that up as actually I was, and you know, I actually had looked that up as to why he was paralyzed and stuff, and I have the article for Ryan for the notes.
I thought the film was silly enough with the certain bear characters that they didn't need the two cops.
Precisely. Exactly what I felt. What was their purpose?
Yeah.
Well, their purpose was to raise the stakes, right? I mean, in a movie, it's all about the stakes, and when you know for a fact that the band's getting back together, the question is what's going to happen with Barry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the cops are there for that. They're also...
Well, they could have done it off-screen. I agree. I kind of agree that they could have done them off-screen. I mean, the...
Only we pull her to die.
But I'm not saying that only they could have been done off-screen. The bears... We needed each of those bears... In order for the finish to happen, we need each of the bear stories. And to find out, you know, what took them away, let's bring them back, and let's give them their enthusiasm back. So we'll start with Henry. I think Barry was his instigator. Barry was the guy who, you know, made Country Bear Hall, who done all this and said, I'm going to go find the Country Bears and get them back together. And it was Barry's, along with Al, I'll say Al was a little bit of an instigator because he always said, yes, I'll do it. Yep. So I really think that, though, Barry was Henry's instigator as to getting Henry moving again and getting Henry energized and believing him back and saying, oh, I used to be up in these rafters. Kind of like, you know, like there are other musical movies here that the people have said, I've always suddenly sat on the rafters. I can hear things singing. And I kind of thought this was Barry's job here.
Yes. The violin movie, right? What's that movie that you like, with the lady who teaches violin class?
Oh,
and they make that exact reference about Radio City Music Hall.
Yes. Good question.
Music and lyrics, is that it or something?
Music
like that?
Of the heart, I think.
Music of the heart.
Right.
Right. Wow. Yes, I think that's the right movie. Yeah. So this is, they make the same reference about Radio City Music Hall as she's coming. She's got her stint to do her fundraiser at Radio City Music Hall in that movie, and the guy who is the show director at Radio City Music Hall, the scheduling guy, he says, he has her stand on the stage, and he goes, just listen. He goes, over there is so-and-so playing this, and over there is so-and-so playing this. It was very much the same moment that they were
See,
trying to make.
I'm dragging you in now! you over, Todd!
But I said there were a few moments that were fine and key, but there were too many moments that I just didn't understand, especially revolving around the cops. I still don't see their purpose in the movie because I don't see how they raise the stakes. Just putting cops in a movie doesn't raise stakes.
Okay, I see that, but the point I'm saying is they're not just in the movie, right? They are pursuing Barry throughout the film. Until Barry comes
know.
Back
Wait, well,
at the
Barry
end.
Barry doesn't know he's pursuing them until we see them on TV.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Prove to me that anything that they do in the movie matters towards the movie. That's what I'm asking. I mean, it's not like in Blues Brothers where the cops actually have some kind of impact as to what's going on. Okay? it's much different. that's what I'm getting at. It's like because they have no impact. They serve their purpose is they are the comic relief in the movie. Not that it needed more comic relief. I didn't understand that part. but I just don't see how they raised the stakes because because they played so much into the fact that they were bumbling idiots of cops, right? Is that they didn't the movie was done in 2002 and they're stringing up analog phones which haven't existed in 14 years at that point. Things like that. I mean, none of that makes any sense. It's just kind of like, what's the point? They might as well have been unstringing Christmas lines, right? Instead of unstringing those lines.
I'm sure when people were watching this movie that was the problem that they had.
No,
was the analog phone lines.
Oh snap!
That and the car wash scene. Okay, I didn't mind that the bus escaped through the car wash and went through the car wash. That was actually like clever and inventive, and along with the rest of what was going on in the bear world, right? But to have the cops actually bother to spend the time to spot them and follow them into the car wash, and then the hilarity. And I note I'm using quotes, which means I don't mean hilarity at all.
Sarcastic. Okay? Yeah.
Of them getting sucked into the car wash. It's like, why?
Why?
Haven't I seen this before?
Okay. So, you're all wrong, and I quit the show. You're mean, evil people, and I don't want to talk to you anymore.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
No. I totally get what you're saying. Okay. I'm saying what I think they were trying to do is offer some sort of impetus to say, to put even more pressure, you know, like, because they have the pressure of getting the band back together and saving Country Bear Hall. And there's a ticking time bomb to that of they have 4 days to do it. Okay. But we know the band's going to get it back together. Correct?
Well, maybe.
It's relatively certain the band's going to get back together.
Well,
right?
At the end, we weren't so sure. I'm just saying, at the end, we weren't so sure.
Yeah, but I mean, like, all of these, the band getting back together movies, like Todd said, that they're playing off of, the band always gets back together. Now, whether they stay together is a whole other story, but, you know, the band always gets back together. Right? So we have that, so there's a little bit of a ticking time bomb there. To me, what they did with having Barry run away and adding the cops to the movie is they said, all right, here's a little bit more to keep you going along, right? That they're going to be chased and the cops are going. You can say whether or not it worked, but that's what they were trying to do. Now, you're correct. They were also adding in comic relief in a movie that is a complete farce. You're not supposed to take any character in this movie seriously.
My point is that in a movie that is a farce and already is humorous to the level that it is to begin with, you know, it doesn't need that extra something else. It's not like, oh, look, I've got 9 cherries on top of my sundae. Let's put 10. It doesn't make a difference.
I'm sorry, guys. I got to go with Todd on this one. You know, it's just they. It was unnecessary to add the cops in this film. I'm sorry, but it's true.
Or at least have them comic relief.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just saying what their intention was. I agree with you about the car wash scene, okay? Like, it doesn't make any sense for them to get sucked into the car wash, and it's kind of silly. But it's, for me, it was worth it for the gag of the guy's mustache falling off. I thought that was hilarious.
Okay.
I guess.
I'm alone in that, apparently.
Even Cheryl's making a face.
But, okay, so, all right. So I'm just going to say it. That boils down the movie to me, right? Because you see this dude with his crazy-looking mustache. It's Diedrich Bader, okay? And if you've ever seen him in any movie, you know he's going to be a complete imbecile. That's what he does.
Yes.
Well, right? No. Well, not. Well, his voice work. We'll say, well, his voice work, no.
No.
Yeah,
his voice work is very smart. In fact, one of his voices is on Phineas and Ferb and is the older brother.
Right.
Right.
Okay. And, but I'm not talking about his voice work. I'm talking about his live action. Here I am. I'm an imbecile work.
Like the Drew Carey show.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I know.
So, but when you see this guy with the mustache and you see a man like Daryl Chill Mitchell with him, you have to understand that these guys are parodies of themselves almost, right? So he's wearing this ridiculous mustache at the very beginning, and if you're like me and you're watching it and you go, that's crazy. And it's in the car wash scene that the mustache comes off that I kind of realized what they were going for a little bit the first time I watched it. It's like the whole movie is basically a wink and a nod. Like, we know this is insane. We know that this is hard to accept. We know that these characters are a joke. Play along. go along for the ride and you'll have fun. Now, you guys didn't, but I did. I thought it was good, so that's a whole other story. But so those are the cops.
He could have just gotten hit in the face with a hose and the mustache comes off. They didn't have to go through all the hot wax stuff and stuff like that.
Okay, valid point.
Okay.
All right, so the first bear that we meet is Big Al. So if you've seen the Disneyland version or the Walt Disney World version of the Country Bear Show, you've seen Big Al. He's the blood on the saddle guy in the animatronic show. And in the film, he's portrayed by James Gammon, who is an actor kind of known for this sort of role, like the old good old boy role. He did a lot of that. He's voiced by this guy. And Big Al is really funny. Anybody disagree with that?
I actually think that Big Al was the most entertaining character in the film.
And he had the fewest lines.
So you're saying those things might be related?
Perhaps.
We had that scripted.
He should have gotten an award for best landscaping.
Yes.
He did enjoy the landscaping, yes. Big Al's big thing throughout the movie is getting people to stay off of his grass. And taking
Big
care.
Al saves the end. That's part of the Big Al hope saves the day.
So yes. Remember we were talking about things that you saw coming? I never had any doubt that Rip Holland wasn't going to promote the band because he was going to be paid off by Christopher Walken's character, and I had no doubt that Big Al was going to save the day the entire movie.
Okay. I agree with you. Still enjoyed it. You're not going to shake me, Perlmutter. I'm unshakable in my affection for the Country Bears. All right, so, and then we meet our good buddy Henry. So Henry is portrayed by Kevin Michael Richardson, voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson,
at least. Who happens to do did this series called Star Wars The Clone Wars, and he played Jabba the Hutt and a couple of the other Hutts.
And he's also done a number of voices in several Star Wars video games over the years as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Did not know that. I did not know that. Thank you, sir. So he's Henry. Henry, also from the ride, or the show, is the master of ceremonies.
The attraction.
There we go.
There we go.
That's what we're calling it. Henry is the master of ceremonies in the attraction, and he portrays a completely different character, I would say, here in the movie than from the ride, or attraction, rather. Thank you, Cheryl.
He also looks different.
Well, he's got the vest and the hat from the attraction, but that's about it. Yeah, I mean, everything else is different. He's not the same guy. So.
Yeah.
But Henry's was the Bears manager back in the day. I never really got, like, what his role was in the whole thing. I'm assuming he was their manager when they were a band.
It was hard to say because I thought he was the owner of the hall, but the truth of the matter is if you actually read all the plot synopsises, it all says that Big Al is actually the caretaker of Country Bear Hall, right? Not Henry, so...
Yeah. It's not clear.
No.
I don't think it has to be, though. But, I mean, no. Henry's the guy who Barry convinces to undertake the journey, right? I mean, Barry... We talked about Barry, but, I mean, Barry's basically a plot device, right? I mean, there's not a lot of huge depth to him or anything. He's just the guy who sets things in motion.
Yeah, I agree, pretty much.
And then the next bear that we meet is Fred Betterhead, correct? Voiced by one Brad Garrett of Everybody Loves Raymond fame. And Fred is introduced because he is serving as security for a video shoot for a young lady named Crystal, who in this movie portrays the role of teenage pop star that Disney was hoping would get a boost from being in this movie.
And so didn't happen.
Yeah, no. I feel bad for her because this is a good song that she does.
Again, I don't think there's a bad song in the movie, to be honest, so...
Yeah. I mean, she...
Though it's not my favorite... I do have a favorite musical number in the movie, but when we get there, I'll mention which one it is.
Okay. But so Barry and Henry meet up with Fred right as he's in the middle of performing with Crystal. So, like, your point, Todd, about the musical and how the musical number should, you know, move the plot forward and that sort of thing, that's not what happens in this movie. This movie is much more like what happens in – it's similar to the Blues Brothers in that, like, they sing in the very unusual places. But they at least provide some sort of reason why people would be singing. Like I said, this is on a music video shoot. And then the next one that they go to, which is they go to see to get Zeb Zuber, voiced by Stephen Root of Office Space and News Radio fame. Which, by the way, side note, News Radio is on Netflix streaming. If you haven't watched that, it's awesome.
Love that.
Love thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could not believe it. I had been years since I watched it, and they're – I can't believe the talent that was on that show, but that's a whole other story. So Zeb Zuber is the fiddle player of the Country Bears, and we meet up with him in Cha-Cha's bar, portrayed by Queen Latifah in a cameo that makes absolutely no sense.
Beyond no sense, but it's okay because she was actually entertaining in the role. It was just kind of bizarre. It was like a role for her. I think that was just written for her.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure, like, there's a lot of instances in the movie where they were getting people to do stuff to build the backstory, and I think they just grabbed whomever they had a relationship with.
Actually, no, I think it actually goes deeper than that. I think it's actually John Hyatt himself. These are all people that have, almost all people have actually performed songs that he wrote.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay.
Queen Latifah performed a John Hyatt?
She's the only one, but everybody else, yes. I mean, most of the people in the movie actually come off of his list of people who he's supported throughout the years. And my guess is, so he probably pulled a lot of the people in.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. But we get Zeb Zuber is recruited after he plays a song with the Brian Setzer Orchestra. Now, that is a great musical number, right?
It is good.
It's good.
But like I said, I don't have a problem with the music in the movie again. So
this is the Queen Latifah one, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, in her bar.
But in order for him to win and leave, he has to win. Barry comes up with this great idea, which I thought was great, is that because he owes money to Queen Latifah, and I'll just refer to Queen Latifah because that's what she is. Because he owes money to Queen Latifah, Barry comes up with the idea that he'll outplay her best guy in a showdown to give us the musical number.
But it's a trope, right? I mean, we're in the middle of a Save the Farm movie, right? And mm-hmm. Here we are presented with the trope of this is the old Henry thing: either you win or lose, or you lose or win, right?
Yeah.
Right, you either win to lose or lose to win. That's the O. Henry thing, one or the other, and that's what's going on here, right? It's just a very, I mean, you know, what he does, it's a clever idea, but at the same time, it's so commonly done in movies where you go, okay, I have this really important thing, but I need that very important thing also. I need both of them. How do I do that? Oh, I'll bet my very important thing against the other very important thing and hope that I win both. That happens a lot in movies.
Okay.
But that was done well here. I thought it was done really well here.
Don't get me wrong. This is actually, end-to-end, this is one of the better scenes in the movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. I see where we're kind of diverging on the movie in what you're saying there, because everything in this movie is a trope. The movie itself is a collection of tropes, and it doesn't pretend to be otherwise, is I guess where I'm coming from, right? It is meant to be, like I said, a wink and a nod movie. It's not supposed to be, like, we're not trying to make The Piano or The English Patient here.
I understand that, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, if you're going to bother to put it on a screen, right, I at least expect there to be something more than just, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed the music, okay, but there was nothing between the music as far as I could tell.
Yeah, and see, I guess where I'm coming from, and we've said it a bajillion times, is that, like I said, they took tropes, but they tried to add humor to it, and, you know, obviously it didn't work for you people because you have no soul. But other than that,
I liked it.
I'm with you, Cheryl.
I like
it. The rest of the show is going to be me and Cheryl talking about how great this movie is.
Way. Be that way.
All right, so our next bear is Tennessee O'Neill, voiced by Toby Huss on the speaking voice, and his problem is that he is missing Trixie. Mm-hmm. So if you've seen the attraction, you know Trixie, the ever-loving, cuddlesome fluff Trixie. And Trixie is voiced by Candy Ford, and Tennessee has to seek out Trixie in order to rejoin the band.
Here's the thing, right? Again, we're talking about tropes and contrived moments in the movie. The bear stopped for the night in a semi-seedy-looking motel. Barry calls home, and on the way back into the room, he notices that in the bar, in the dance hall slash bar slash whatever it is next door, Trixie happens to be on live and on stage.
Yeah. It's so convenient.
Yes, I mean, I, the writer must have gone, I don't know how to work Trixie into this. Wait for it. They'll park at a motel and she'll be right there.
Look at Ryan. He's so upset with us right now.
So, Cheryl. I thought that the musical number between Trixie and Tennessee was really good because it's voiced by Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt, as Todd, or that other guy that I'm not talking to right now, mentioned earlier. You know, John Hiatt wrote the songs and he's worked with Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt before. And I thought they did a great job of doing of having the bears sing the song and be sincere. And of course, Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt, it's going to be hard to beat that when you're trying to do some country. Wouldn't you agree, Cheryl?
Yeah, I thought that it was cool. That other guy there, whoever he is, the one I'm married to, what's his name? Also noticed that Bonnie Raitt was actually in the scene.
Yes.
They're both in the
scene. Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt,
Don Henley sitting next to her at the bar. So here's the funny thing, right? Is the way Henry's talking the rest of the time is like this and blah, right? And then he comes out with Don Henley's singing voice, and of all the bears and their singing voices to their regular voices, it was the most mismatched one. It really was.
Yeah, it's really terrible. I agree with that. It's a way to shoehorn in Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt is what it is.
Yeah. It really was. I mean, that was the entire thing, but I just couldn't figure out why they didn't just pick someone else to be voicing him normally if he was going to sound like that, which I didn't have a problem with the way he sounded either way. It's just they didn't go together.
Right. I agree. I totally agree with that. I just, again, this one for me was you have to be willing to kind of accept the core conceit that A, the bears are in the real world, and B, that everything is a joke. Even the down to the casting, probably. all right, so our last bear in the Country Bear Band that we pick up is Ted Betterhead, who is the lead vocal and lead guitar player. So basically there doesn't need to be a band unless there's Ted, because nobody else is actually doing anything in the band. Because Tennessee's playing the one-string thing, the other guys are playing the fiddle and the harmonica, which means there's really not much of a band without Ted playing the guitar and singing. Ted is voiced by Diedrich Bader, Officer Cheats, in other words. And I thought he does a good job. Like you mentioned, Cheryl, with his voice work, he actually does pretty good. And he does great acting with his voice work. He's just known in his live action roles to be an imbecile, which he plays well, I have to say. There's a nice little fun moment where they come up to the house and they see Elton John out in the garden, and nobody realizes Elton John until they leave. So that we finally get the band back together because Fred, his brother, confronts Ted and gets the band back together. But we still have a moment where there's some doubt, right? Because Ted, even though he gets back on the bus with them, the old problems come up where they don't want to be together as a band because Ted doesn't see the point in it. He doesn't understand what they're going to do or anything. And Barry gets frustrated, runs back to his family, and it's not until Fred reads a letter or a assignment that Barry wrote that we are confirmed that the band is getting back together. That's the moment of doubt that Cheryl was talking about earlier.
Can we stop for a moment?
No, that was not the moment of doubt.
Oh, it wasn't?
No.
They're on a road trip. They're apparently going cross country, picking up the band in the means of 4 days, right? And Barry runs all the way home, right? I mean, he literally gets out of the bus, gets on the road, and then like 10 minutes later, he's home.
Yes.
Did they ever like leave the neighborhood?
No.
did they really need the bus then?
That was, like, to me, that was a joke. That's the way I took that. Like, I guess that was intentionally a joke.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, you know what we did? We skipped over my favorite musical number in the movie.
Which is?
Which was the one that happens in the restaurant when they're dancing the, what is it, the Kick It Into Gear.
Kick It Into Gear.
Yeah.
I want Miss Jennifer Page.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
That was my favorite song in the whole movie.
I would agree with you. Jennifer Page from? Anybody? Bueller?
Go for it.
Bueller? From Marietta, Georgia, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
Yours truly.
I thought there was going to be some movie or television reference in there.
No. From right here in my hometown. Yes, she's from here.
She also lives just down the street.
Actually, she literally used to live down the street, if you want to get technical about it. But that's a whole other story. That's probably an invasion of her privacy, but we'll move on. She did this. She had a big song, Crush.
The court case is still pending.
Shut up. She had this song called Crush.
Oh, is that the
that
one
was a big hit?
It's Just a Little Crush?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. That was before this movie. She was kind of struggling and I think hoping to get another boost to her career from this. And yeah, that didn't happen.
And so. $16 million later, look what happened.
Yeah. But that
is popular.
What's that?
At least her song Crush is popular.
It is. I still hear it played on the big 90s weekend on our local radio station.
Yeah, there you go.
She's got that going for her. Well, it is her hometown. She could walk around and be like, hey, that's my song on the radio.
Right, exactly.
You know, for all it's worth. But we did, so we were touching on Barry walking home, but, you know, the big villain in the movie is Christopher Walken.
Yes.
As Reed Thimple.
Andy, the double villain! This was great! He was a double villain!
Yes, he was.
Sure. When they're unbuttoning the shirt, I said to Cheryl, I literally said it at this point, oh my god, I can't believe they're doing this. Because this was the only thing I didn't see coming in the whole movie.
And I would agree with that too. So what he's referring to, and turn it off now if you want to spoil the big reveal, because it's a big one. Early on in the movie, the Country Bears reveal that they got their big break by winning a talent show against an armpit musician. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, someone who uses his arm to make sounds like those that would come from other places. by the name of Benny Bogswaggle. And so we have Christopher Walken throughout the entire movie as Reed Thimple, the banker who's going to destroy Country Bear Hall. And I have to say, the scenes of him in his office smashing the models of Country Bear Hall with the weight cracks me up every time I see this movie. Because it is so silly.
It's also classic Christopher Walken. It's probably the only stuff in the whole movie that's classic Christopher Walken.
And I have to say, whenever I'm walking through Frontierland, I always go, oh no, a Country Bear Hall!
Nice.
I know. Except, you know, in real life, it's not called Country Bear Hall, right?
Yes, I know.
Okay.
But he gets, at the very end, he kidnaps the bears to try and keep them from performing so he can crush Country Bear Hall and reveals that he is, in fact, Benny Bogswaggle. And that's why he's been trying to do all the horrible things he's been trying to do to Country Bear Hall, which I thought was great. It gives a motivation to this horrible character.
Yeah, well, nobody else thought it was so great. In fact, his Christopher Walken's performance in this movie was considered so bad that he was nominated for a Razzie Award.
Yeah, he was.
Wow.
And you know, well, Christopher Walken getting a Razzie Award, probably he'd love it and soak it up because that's exactly who he is, right? I mean, you know, he just loves anything like that. You know, he's definitely of the mindset that any publicity is good publicity. I mean, he didn't win the Razzie Award, but still it's, you know, it's not exactly what you want to be nominated for either. That's...
So say you. I personally would love to win a Razzie Award. Just saying.
Sure.
Yeah. But you, I'm sure you all see where this is going. The band, you know, they overcome Christopher Walken. They get back together. They get to Country Bear Hall. They play, and they save the day. And, of course, Big Al saves the day because Big Al forces everyone to park in the back so that when the bears get there, they come into the hall and there's no one there. He actually opens up the door, and because he didn't want anyone on his grass, he made everyone park in the back, and it floods with customers, and Country Bear Hall is saved. Which, I have to say, the mathematicians who added up the money that quickly, wow, I was impressed.
Yeah, so I actually found the end disappointing. You want to know why? Because after all that build-up, all we got out of the Country Bears was one song, and then the credits rolled.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I just didn't understand that. There wasn't even like an encore moment or anything like that. It was just, that was it. And it wasn't even the best song in the movie. That was the other half of it. So it just kind of, the end felt a little flat.
That was my favorite song in the movie, Straight to the Heart of Love. Is that what song you're speaking
of? Yeah,
that's
the song.
That's the one. Yeah, that was my favorite out of the film. But.
And I like that song, but it's a low tempo song. And that was an up tempo moment. I think that was my biggest complaint with the movie. Was that should have been a raucous reunion sort of thing, and it was kind of a slower moving. It built to a higher tempo, and I guess that's what they were going for, but, you know, it's not like John Hyatt is known for his up-tempo crazy songs, you know?
There's one more scene I liked that I liked watching that was really funny, is that they couldn't fit one, I forget which bear, they could not fit in the car, so they made him go on the boat.
That was good.
That was Ted, yeah. That was Ted.
That was funny.
That was good.
What was the point? So, Charlotte, one point in the movie, I can't remember what point was, but I remember what you said. You said this movie just got better and worse all at the same time.
I didn't forget.
I think it was the point where he kidnaps them, right? Is something about that you liked for some reason. I don't remember what it was specifically.
No, I think it's when Christopher Walken reveals himself.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, he reveals himself to be the armpit musician.
Yes.
Nice. I have to say that was funny.
And that's what Cheryl said. This movie just got better and worse all at once. She literally said that. No making that quote up.
Yeah, so that's the Country Bears, and we are going to have to agree to disagree. So one of the things I was going to say is I think Disney, frankly, they have done a lot, botched the release date of this movie. So I mentioned in the beginning, they released it on July 21st, 2002. Do you know what other movie came out that day?
No, I didn't check, but do tell.
Also a comedy, also a farce. Also doesn't take itself very seriously. Austin Powers in Goldmember came out that day.
Oh.
Yeah, that could explain the opening weekend number.
Yeah. Huge, huge, huge movie. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I believe that was like one of the highest grossing comedies ever at the time. So it just wasn't a movie for summer. It was a movie that probably could have done better had it been released in like October. Like Beverly Hills Chihuahua, you know, another movie that did not get good ratings from the critics, but still ended up making over $100 million. Mm-hmm. That's all I had to say. I think they could have done better with scheduling the film.
Yeah. So, what do you think of Pete Hastings there?
As the director?
Yes. So, I mean, because most of his prior work, right, is Tiny Toon's Adventures, Pinky and the Brain, you know, Animaniacs. I mean, and here he is doing this movie.
But I think he was trying to bring that sensibility to this movie.
Do you think he succeeded?
Yes and no. I think he succeeded in bringing a little bit of the zaniness and wink at the camera style to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he succeeded, but it needed to be more of that to make it work.
Okay.
Like, I picked up on it, as you could probably tell, but I think it would have worked better for most audiences if he had gone even farther with it.
Okay, I could buy that.
I think they tried to, like, I basically think they tried to straddle the fence of that sensibility and being a trope family comedy. And I think they could have just dropped the trope family comedy and gone all the way to the zaniness, and the movie would have worked even better. Because I think it works fine.
Now you know what he went on to do, right?
I do not.
Oh, so he went on to be the director for Gary Sinise in the pre-show for Mission Space.
Oh,
big promotion.
Yeah.
How about that?
A lot of directorial work coming his way after this movie.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, that was, you know, I think it showed.
Actually, he was a writer on the Kung Fu Panda series.
Yeah, he's also, there's a television show coming out, and he's the writer for it, I think, as well.
So
don't shed many tears for Pete Hastings, is what you're saying here.
I'm just saying, you know, it is what it is, you know. Like I said,
unlike the lady from prom, he'll still have a paycheck to cash.
Yes, he has. Yeah. He has made a comeback. But in the length of time it takes for people who file bankruptcy to make a comeback.
You're a horrible person. All right, Todd Perlmutter, rate this movie so that we can end my pain.
Yeah, I think, if I recall correctly, I gave, like, 2 stars to Beverly Hills Chihuahua and, like, a half a star to Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2 or something like that, right?
Well, somewhere when Jasper gave some rating. Jasper gave some ratings, too, so...
Yeah, well, that's okay, Jasper. There's no... Well, there are animals. I can say there's no animals in this movie, but see.
There's a chicken.
That doesn't work. There's bears, Cheryl.
There's a chicken. No, there's a real chicken. The chicken!
There is a real chicken, yes.
There was not a person in costume playing the chicken.
And Mr. Chicken's not a guy.
Look at Ryan. Ryan's in so much pain.
I'm disappointed in all of you.
So, you know what? I'm going with 1.5 stars. I really can't rate it higher than that. But if I was rating the soundtrack, I'd be like, you know, 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
All right, Bree.
Okay, yeah, strictly speaking about the soundtrack, you know, for me it would be a 3. Now, not talking about the attraction. I love the attraction with all my heart at Walt Disney World. It's one of my favorites. I go to it as often as I can whenever I'm there. So putting the attraction aside, just focusing on this film, I give it 1 star.
All right, the only person whose opinion counts on this program, Cheryl... I know you're going to give it a good rating. So what do you say, Cheryl?
I think it's 3.5. I mean, it's not. I would not put it on the movies I'm going to lose list, like some other movies. But it's one I would definitely, you know, if like I were to find it, like in a bargain bin at a flea market, I would definitely buy it for the $5 and watch it a few times, and let the Nup kids watch it.
And I will give it 3 stars because I recognize that it's a flawed movie. But you know what? It's charming, it's fun, and it's funny. And I don't care what you say, Bree or Todd. And that's what I'm rating, and I'm sticking to it. And I do
own
it.
Hey, wait, I rated it higher than you. Right? How did that happen?
I will put it to you this way. I would watch this movie in equal rotation with On Stranger Tides. There, I said it.
Whoa.
They're both about the same quality-wise.
I can't even process that statement. I can't.
Just saying.
Nope.
You know, though, you did notice that Ponce de Leon was at the back of the bus, right? Sorry.
I did not notice that.
I guess, no. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Let's put that on Wikipedia. That
yeah. That will wrap up our look at the Country Bears. We hope you enjoyed it. Apparently, most of you will not have. So, you know, apologies to those who watched this one and got ready by watching it and who didn't enjoy it.
Ryan picked it.
Yeah, I did. Because it's good.
Okay.
All right. Until next time, you can stay in touch with us on Twitter at DizFilmProject. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DisneyFilmProject. You can go to the website, DisneyFilmProject.com, leave comments, read the show notes. You can read all about what's going on with Disney Film Project. You could go and rate us in iTunes. You can go to iTunes and leave a review for us, and you can let us know that you love us that way. We are very needy people. We need to be shown that we are loved, so leave us a review in iTunes. You can follow the Adventures of Bree at Adventures of Bree at adventuresofbree.blogspot.com. You can go to read Todd's blogs at touringplans.com. You can read my blogs on DisneyFilmProject.com on the Disney films of 1940s right now. And you can read my blogs on touringplans and DisneyDrivenLife.com. So, until next week, folks, I'm only in it for the honey, and we will talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye, and that's the German spelling.
Bye.